This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 24. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
02088 167 691,
and you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Hello, Berners. Hello, Garras. Welcome along to the show.
Hello, fellow. You all right?
Yes, keeping very well. Enjoying the sunshine. It's few and far between and in this part of the world, but you've got to make the most of it, haven't you?
Absolutely right.
And what's happening with you, Berners?
Oh, some fantastic crickety stuff. We were at the Chance to Shine National Cricket Day yesterday with Clacton Coastal Academy, which was very good. We intertwined a pitch vision net session with a maths lesson, which involved several students with clipboards and calculators, angles, protractors, cricket balls. We had one Maurice Chambers from Essex who ran in and bowled, and the kids went about plotting the line and length of his delivery. So it was very intriguing and very different, and it brought a few smiles on people's faces, and we generally had a great day. So I'm good at the moment.
Very good. Sounds awesome.
Applied mathematics. You can't go wrong with that, can you?
Exactly. It was a mathematics teacher with a passion for cricket and some hungry kids who wanted to learn a bit about cricket whilst not having to sit in a maths lesson. So it was a win-win for everyone involved. Lovely chili con carne down there as well. Told the fish and chips are good in Clacton, but went chili con carne. It was a bit on the spicy side, though. So next time I'm going to go fish and chips.
You're not a spice man then, Berners?
No. As our chief would know about from our times in India, I'm adverse to pepper, actually, let alone spice. Yeah, very plain Jane. Bangers and mash, lad. Bangers and mash.
Well, let's talk a little bit about cricket. We've got the Champions Trophy to talk about, and there's been a couple of articles knocking about this week where the talk has all been about how the pitches have been dry and flat and the ball hasn't been swinging very much, which got me thinking, because I played a game this weekend where the probably it was as opposite as you could get from that. The pitch was a minefield. It was green. It was slightly, it had been covered, but you know, the weather had meant that it was still was a little bit wet, and the ball was hooping around right from the beginning. So it made me wonder, is there a gap, a widening gap between the pro and the amateur games because of the improved ability to make pitches batting paradises, if you so require, even during early English summer?
Well, I think there is, and that comes down to two things, doesn't it? It comes down to the expertise of the groundsmen that are putting the professional pitches together, because they're highly qualified, highly experienced. But also, and probably more important, I think, is the time element to it. You know, these guys have an opportunity to work on a pitch all day long, whereas most fellas that are doing club grounds are doing it on a voluntary basis. So, you know, there's no hard lines. That's just the way it is, unfortunately. And if you're lucky enough to be at a club where you've got a groundsman who's there on a full-time basis, then you normally reap the rewards in terms of the quality of the pitch that you have.
Do you think, though, in recent years, because of the innovations in ground care, that gap is getting wider?
I do, because the cost of it is immense, isn't it? And I probably didn't appreciate that fully until I started working over with Cricket Ireland and working with a number of groundsmen on improving their equipment, the loam types, the seed types, all of those different things, and it all adds up. So you know, obviously a professional organisation will have bigger budgets, and significantly bigger budgets, to produce good pitches. Number of ground staff as well comes into play, and the equipment that you can get out on it.
Well, that throws up a couple of other issues for me, in that if someone grows up playing in a certain set of conditions, and you know, especially if we're talking about England, if you're playing in a certain type of conditions in club cricket, and then you develop and move on and move to a better standard where the pitches are improved, then there are certain technical things that you might get away with that you wouldn't get away with when the conditions are more favourable to the bowlers. Does that mean as a coach you have to work harder with players who are more likely to play on better standards of pitches to be able to play the kind of shots that they can get away with that maybe they wouldn't get away with in on a green top where the ball could do anything off a length?
Well, I think it's a really good point, and that's one of the reasons why you get situations where professional players play on a wicket that goes up and down, or players on a wicket that goes a lot laterally, the sort of stuff that we're used to in club cricket, and then they come unstuck because they've become accustomed to practicing and playing on good wickets. So it's really important that we can prepare people to be able to adapt, isn't it? You know, and a fifth-day test match pitch provides a challenge that is going to be difficult for a batter in a lot of places around the world, and therefore we've got to make sure that we're adapting our game accordingly as batters and as bowlers. And one of the things that I was very keen on, when I was at Somerset, we had an incredibly flat pitch at Taunton. It was notoriously flat. I think every opposition batter used to look forward to coming to Taunton year in, year out. But one of the key things for us was to increase the ability and the adaptation rate and speed that up of our batters when we went away from home, because not all of the time when we were away from home were we playing on a flat one. And the way that we did that, developed a ground up the road in Taunton in Gypsy Lane, and we'd go up there and practice on club wickets a lot. And it gave us a real good insight into how to play when the ball moved laterally, how to play when the ball went up and down, instead of moaning about it, actually seeing that as a positive challenge. So I think it's really important, even if you're coaching players at the top end of the game, that you're always putting a challenge into that pitch as well. We had a net last night where it spun sideways, and it was fantastic. And initially the players wanted to moan about it, because normally their facilities at Millfield are as flat as a pancake. But actually we turned it into a fantastic practice where people started to work at different techniques that they could put into place and adapt into that situation. So I think it's vital that we get a bit of both at the top end. And equally at the bottom end, you know, it's good that the ball nipping around, because when we get onto a pitch that is flat, we generally make the most of it. And I can always remember looking forward to playing on the flat pitches after playing on the ones that nipped around and trying to fill my boots as a result. And I think it's easier to go from a nippy around pitch up than sometimes it is going from flat pitches into nippy around ones.
It's a different set of challenges, and I suppose that's what is part of the reason that makes cricket so great, is that there is such a wider range of challenges that you get compared to other sports. So,
correct.
You know, that's, I don't think any other sport is quite as influenced by the condition of the pitch and the condition of the what's going on overhead as cricket really is there. So, you know, that's a unique part of the game. Okay, let's leave it there, because it's time to head over to the newsroom for this week's Pitch Vision headlines.
Here's the Pitch Vision news from around the world this week. PBM Coaching are the latest London-based grassroots coaching team to receive a Pitch Vision system. Players, coaches and parents are excited about trying out the ball tracking technology at the Nets. Pitch Vision user KushDev37 has reached 300 wicket mark on Pitch Vision, with over 2,800 deliveries already logged. Congratulations go out to the Indian bowler. Innovative cricket fitness app BatX has achieved its aim of gaining funding with sponsorship from Pitch Vision. Coaches and players who are keen to test the system out before its launch can get a preview on the Pitch Vision Academy website. Pitch Vision CEO Richard Welsh has returned from a successful trip to Delhi, where he has confirmed a deal for more Pitch Vision batting simulators. The real-life arcade game will be installed in shopping malls across India. And finally, Pitch Vision Academy cricket show host Berners is embroiled in controversy. A statement from Berners earlier today read, "I was a bit bored and I wanted to liven up the afternoon with a head-high full toss." For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision News for this week.
It's interview time now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and this week I am joined from a part of the world where you wouldn't necessarily think about when you first think about cricket, which is California. I'm joined by the founder of the California Cricket Academy, Hemant. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show.
Thank you. I'm happy to talk to you today.
Now, for those people who don't know, tell us a little bit about the California Cricket Academy. You've been going for 10 years now?
Yes, this, we are celebrating our 10th year. Academy was founded, Dave, in 2003. We started with a small group, about 24. Actually, we were thinking we'll probably have only 11. We got 24 kids, and we very first year we decided to go with qualified coaches, and we have never looked back, and we have grown to, you know, about every year about 200-300 kids go through training at the academy.
Coaching has changed a lot in the last 10 years. It's moved on. It's got a lot more technology involved in it. So and of course you're in California, which is tends to be a very high tech part of the world. So how are you using technology in those areas?
We use various technologies. We obviously there's a video analysis, and we have used some tools that are used by sports mechanics, you know, BCCI and other organizations. Mm-hmm. We also have high performance training from ICC Americas, so they help provide that. We use bowling machines, and there are also, you know, we're looking forward to also offer some online courses with specialized coaches, you know, from organizations like yours. Mm. Right?
Yes, of course, the Pitch Vision Academy provides a lot of online support. So, delighted to help you out in that area, of course. And when you identify players with a little bit of talent and you think they're going to go on to be a little bit more than just someone who plays for a bit of fun or a schoolboy or a schoolgirl cricketer, what do you what work do you do with them?
Yeah, so we, from the day one, we focus on competitive cricket. So even we have under 10 tournament, under 9 tournaments, all with hardball. So we started academy with, you know, maybe first 2 weeks with tennis ball, but after that it's always hardball. And we prepare them to represent national squads. So usually in under 15, half of the squad is from our academy for last few years. Under 19, we just had 3 boys picked for under in the 14 and 5 in 17. So, I mean, you know, it's what we prepare for them. We tour various countries. We tour in India every year. This year we are coming to England, August 2 to 14, 12th. And so that gives them opportunity to play in various conditions.
Yes, of course. Well, you know, there's that you couldn't get two more different sets of conditions than playing in India and playing in England. They're kind of the opposite end of the scale, really, aren't they?
Right.
What do you think players are going to learn from their time in the UK?
I think, you know, UK is really, I mean, we have learned, and everyone has advised us that, you know, you should always go and play in UK. So I'm trying to figure out what we'll learn, but definitely different environment, different pitch, certain discipline. You know, faster tracks and whatnot. I mean, so I'm really looking forward to understand English cricket more with this tour. So honestly, I don't have an answer, but this is, I mean, you know, every coach recommends, so we said, okay, let's do that.
Well, okay, well, best of luck with the upcoming tour. I hope it goes very well for you, and it's a success. And if people want to find out more about the California Cricket Academy, where would they need to go?
Yeah, so I think they can visit our academy webpage, www.calcricket.org, calcricket.org, and they can contact us. In fact, if somebody wants to bring a team here, we'll be happy to host them. And we conduct national tournaments every year. We host a lot of teams. This year we are going to host touring Trinidad and Tobago team, under 19 team. So I mean, you know, if there's an open invitation here.
Well, if you're listening, then that's a fantastic invitation. It's a wonderful part of the world, California. So I urge anyone who's got a team and they fancy some fantastic hospitality, head over to the California Cricket Academy website, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. So thank you very much for your time today on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
Okay, time now for the questions section. And every week, of course, we have a mailbag, a couple of questions where we try and give you as much help as possible to your cricketing quandaries. And question of the week also wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So what's the first question this week, Berners?
First question is in from Nick in Adelaide. He's a PE teacher at a secondary school. And he's just saying that one of the difficulties that he encounters whilst coaching cricket is that the students lose concentration and focus on the task at hand. So he's saying that the batters are thinking about something else when facing a ball, and the bowlers and fielders are still having friendly banter when they should be focused on the delivery. So he's just asking what he could do to get these guys focused on what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. I suppose that students are quite prevalent to this, but also it goes throughout the whole of cricket, I think. And Steve Ball, who's somebody that I work with heaps, both at Hampshire when I was a player and then with the England setup, and then also with coach education, is probably one of the leading cricket psychologists in the world. And he talks about concentration as something that you have a bank of. And you start with 100% of concentration, and then you've got 0%, and there's no way to replenish it until you either relax or go to sleep. So it's how you use it over the course of that day. So some people that are always on it or always concentrating are likely to lose concentration earlier in the day than other people. So how you apply it is really, really important. And he talks about having a dimmer switch. So a bit like a light, you know, as you go into a room, you turn the light on with your dimmer switch, rather than turning it on and off, which is pretty inefficient and requires quite a lot of that energy, that concentration to be used. He talks about having a dimmer switch that you can turn up when you need to have it on, i.e. As the bowlers turn around and coming into bowl, and then turning it down in between deliveries. So you're letting a sort of an awareness wash over you rather than being absolutely focused on what you're doing. And I think we can all relate to that. You know, having times where we've batted well and where we're in the zone as such, we probably do that. We learn to relax in between each balls and just have a chat with somebody, or, you know, let your mind just wander off and then bring it back in when the bowler turns to come back in. And the same for bowlers and fielders as well. It's exactly the same process. So it's how you use your concentration, and the dimmer switch is a really good way of incorporating that into your practice. We just talked about in a previous question the flick of mud off of the pitch, and that could be a physical cue. So I've worked with batters in the past that actually use the lines on the return crease as a physical cue of when they turn when they turn up their concentration. So they'll walk out of the box that is the crease and in between each ball and just let themselves drift into wherever. And the moment they cross that line and come back into towards their stance is the moment they turn that concentration dimmer switch up. So things like that are really useful tactics to use when you're batting. Bowling wise, you know, walking back, you just catch the ball, you shine it. That's your time where you turn your dimmer switch down. And then as soon as you turn and stand at the end of your mark, that's when you really focus it up. But you find your own way in that. There are just two examples from players that I've worked with in the past of how they've gone about it.
That's a great example, and it's interesting this year because I'm coaching a couple of different teams. I'm coaching some talented under-11s who are very good at staying focused because they've got a little bit about them. And I'm coaching a club under-14s, and the standards there are much lower. And so they seem to be much more easily distracted. So it's an interesting challenge for me. Whereas I set up the same practice with the under-11s, they would do it, and they would keep doing it even if they got tired and fed up of it, which obviously I'd be doing it for too much. They would still keep doing it. Whereas I think with the under-14s, they would get fed up a lot. A, they would get fed up a lot more quickly, and B, as soon as they got fed up, they would start doing silly things like, you know, wrestling each other and stuff like that. So it's that's I've got two extremes of challenges there to manage. And I think the way that I'm trying to do it is to find ways to keep those players who get more easily distracted as involved as possible, or as long as possible. And that means keeping them doing lots of different things and keeping the activity level, so they're not standing around too much waiting to bowl, for example. You don't want to have seven bowlers queued up if four of them are the type who get easily distracted and suddenly start chatting to each other about the previous night's television or whatever it is. So I think as a coach, looking from a coach's point of view, I think that's a big challenge, is to keep players involved as much as possible.
No, I agree, definitely, and that will help. But equally, we also need to train them to be able to deal with times when they're not involved. Because, you know, if you're fielding out on the boundary, for example, and you haven't fielded for the ball for 15 minutes and you've been fairly inactive, then all of a sudden a potential match-winning catch comes along. You've got to be on it. So whilst it's great, especially at a young age, to get people involved and using their short amount of concentration as best as possible. Equally, we do, particularly as you get up the age groups and you start playing in cricket that leads into senior cricket, we do need to give people the opportunity of having time where they're not doing anything and then can turn it on. Because ultimately, particularly in the field and particularly at slip, I mean, you could go four or five games without a slip chance, and then the one that you need to catch to win a match comes along and you're expected to catch it. So we also need to train that side of it as well. And I think that's a really important thing to consider, particularly as you get up towards the senior age groups.
Our next question comes in from Jacques, and his question is about fast bowling. He's saying that it's come to his attention that most fast bowlers have a good rhythm and do the same movements over and over again in their bowling action. And as a result, they're so used to these movements that it comes naturally out of second nature. So he's asking what amount of repetition is required to do this? Or in other words, is there a type of magic number of times you have to repeat an action before it comes to you as a second nature? So what do we think, guys?
Yeah, answer to that is there is no magic number. We've talked a little bit about this in the past, and to me, it's about repetition for some and building up serious amounts of repetition. And for others, it's about just doing it absolutely spot on for short periods of time. You know, we've talked about the differences between people. And as a result, there is no hard and fast rule on it. So that's my view. I think you need to take each individual as an individual and apply your coaching knowledge and your coaching approaches across whatever range of time that does to take it. If you look at a McGrath did thousands and thousands and thousands of repetitions, you know, in his informative years, whereas other bowlers came into it fairly late and didn't do so much. And it's not just bowling, but it's in every aspect of cricket and every aspect in elite life. People do a different amount. There's normally, you know, for example, the musicians in orchestras, the main study, the 10,000 hours study came from. There was a huge difference between the guys that were doing 34,000 and hours and 6,000 hours. You know, that was the range between all of the guys that are there. They were all at the same level, but there was a huge range in the amount of hours that were put in. And the mean average came out as 10,000. But actually, you know, the standard deviation was more around sort of 8,000 to 11,000 rather than 7,000 to 11,000 rather than it just being a hard and fast 10,000 that you hear people talking about. So I'm not a big fan of putting a number on it. I think you take each person as an individual. You work them hard enough and you work them consistently enough. But, you know, in terms of numbers, it's a very difficult thing to put down.
Mm. I guess the number is you have to take the number from the quality, because as soon as the quality goes, then you're just wasting your time anyway, aren't you? I mean, it's no good saying, right, I need to do 3 hours every week for the next 10 years and I'm done. But that doesn't take it with the quality of what those. If you do 3 hours of something which isn't going to help you get any better, then it's a bit of a waste of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a coach the other day, and somebody who's coaching at a good level told one of the players who works with us at the school that he needed to hit 500 balls a day. And to me, you know, it's such a generic statement that. And, you know, what quality do you need? What shots does he need to play? Where have you got your figure of 500 from? There's so many questions that you need to ask back about that before you take it on board and do it. And I think it's really dangerous, because you'll end up with people practicing the wrong things a lot of the time. And then, of course, when they get into a match situation and they've practiced the wrong things a lot of the time, they go into bat and all of a sudden they're doing completely the wrong thing, and it's very difficult to get them out of it because they've done so much of it. So I think you've got to be really, really careful with this stuff. And I know that's probably not the answer that you're looking for, but this is why coaching is an art. You know, if it was about just doing the same numbers, everybody could do it. And it's not about that. It's about the art and how you apply things into each individual player.
Mm. That just leads me to a side issue, a side question as well. We're talking about repetition. Bowling action is the one which is talked about a lot when it comes to get repetitions and all that kind of thing. There's often a phrase which is said, well, his action is very robotic. You know, it looks coached. Now, I've heard different views on this, and I really was wondering what yours was, Gareth, when it comes to that. When it comes to using repetitions to develop a bowling action, which is a well-established way of coaching sport, how does that idea of someone who's been, I guess, in quotes, overcoached and become robotic, where does that fit in for you?
Yeah, the interesting, I mean, you hear it a lot, don't you? Right? It's a great question, Dave, because you do hear it a lot. He looks robotic. And what generally are the things that define robotic? And what I've got in my head is very much somebody who's not looking comfortable with what they're doing, or it's looking a forced effort as opposed to it being something that flows in a Brett Lee, Michael Holding, Glenn McGrath, Stuart Broad, Jimmy Anderson type of way. So if somebody looks like they're battling with something, it generally means that they're not comfortable with it and their bodies aren't comfortable with it. And we talk a lot about preferences, and really fast bowling to me is a classic example of, there are certain things that we know helps to get the ball down the other end. And if those things can be adhered to, then they give you the best chance of bowling at 90 plus miles an hour. However, we've also got to work within the preference of that person. So again, this is where the coaching stuff comes to is a bit of an art. So if we can build those prerequisites of somebody bowling at 90 miles an hour in with the preference of somebody's movement and how they move, then A, they're more likely to be bowling at 90 miles an hour. B, they're more likely to be doing it in a safe fashion, so they're going to be bowling in a healthy fashion. And C, they're more likely to probably enjoy what they're doing and not be labelled as somebody who looks robotic. So again, I'll come back to the art bit. This is why coaching, this is why we do this show, yeah, is because coaching isn't about you've got to do it this way. There are some key principles that we talk about regularly, and Pont talks about regularly. If you're in England, then you'll know that Kevin Shine puts these things into play regularly, but equally we then have to apply that into each individual that we're working with, and that is coaching, and that's what makes us do this show, because people ask great questions which ultimately come round to know your stuff, but don't be a slave to it. It's soapbox time, and I can just see in the distance over the valleys, or down the valleys and over the hills, that David's getting up onto the soapbox, and it's his turn to go.
As I mentioned earlier in the show, I am coaching some talented under-11s this year, and one of the big challenges for them is playing in a longer format of cricket. They're playing 40-over cricket, which is quite a jump up from previous years, and when they play their club cricket, they're playing 20-over stuff. So the challenge, I think, for me is to twofold. First of all, is to make sure that those players are well rested, well looked after during those games. But also, secondly, to help those players understand the challenges of playing longer cricket and to develop a method that works for them in order to play a longer format of cricket, which will stand them in good stead in future years. So if you are faced with that challenge of playing longer cricket as a coach, then, or as a player, then look at it as a challenge to look forward to maybe the day when you're playing professionally in 4 or even 5 day cricket.
Very good.
Okay, that's all we got time for on the show this week. It's been another cracker. I've enjoyed myself very much on this one. And before we go, we just need to decide on a winner for a couple of really good questions this week. And the winner gets the prize of the online coaching course, which is on Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had Nick's question about keeping concentration with younger players. And we had Jack's question about the magic number of times to repeat an action. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Nick's question this week. I think concentration, it affects everybody, doesn't it? And if we can all find a way of incorporating some of those principles that I talked about there and that you talked about, then it's only going to help our players. Because if we can't concentrate effectively, we're not going to be able to put our skills into play on a regular basis.
Well, congratulations, Nick. That is winging its way to you. Now, if somebody wanted to get in touch with us here at Pitch Vision Academy and get their question answered on the show and also get their chance to win the prize, which is, of course, the online coaching course, how would they do that, Berners?
They can give us a call, and our number here at PV Towers is 02088 167 691. Or if you're a bit more of an advanced mailer and you like an email, it's coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, it is. Our Twitter is also available at PV Cricket Coach. And you can find us on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, you'll see our videos posted up there, articles, and you can throw a question to us if you like as well by posting it to our wall there. If you want to subscribe to the show and listen to it every week, you can do so by heading over to iTunes, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us. Just click on the subscribe button, and whenever the show comes out, you'll get that automatically downloaded onto your iPhone, your iPad, your Windows device, whatever you've got there. And if you want to use something else, if you don't fancy iTunes, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you can use the very clever RSS feed to stick that into whatever podcast catching program that you have. That's all for this week. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Thanks very much.